is up? It's The Rant. My name is Jeff Ratcliffe. It is Friday, July 10th. And I think we got to be around the halfway point. I'm not actually keeping track of how many teams we've covered so far. Yeah, we got to be at the halfway point. And the series is rolling on, as you can see. We're going to talk about the Las Vegas Raiders and the Miami Dolphins on today's show. So let's dive right in. Let's dive right in. Knock on wood, if you're with me here, we'll talk about these Raiders. The Las Vegas Raiders. Still getting used to that one. But either way, very interesting, this team, especially after last year. They exceeded expectation for sure. And I think they really improved themselves with what they did in the draft, adding some talent at wide receiver, which was, you know, an area that they needed to address. And then getting a versatile weapon in Lynn Bowden, who is just, you know, a very intriguing player for a number of reasons. But let's just start with Derek Carr. We'll start with the unsexy part of this offense. And, you know, to his credit, when you look at what Derek Carr has been able to do, I mean, 4,000 plus, he's generally right in that area. He just cracked it last year, you know, 21 passing scores. He ends up finishing as the number 16 fantasy quarterback, number 18 the year before that. I'm just not willing to rank him in that range because, you know, I've talked about this with other guys. I talked about, if you go back to the Cleveland Browns podcast, about Jarvis Landry. Sure, Jarvis Landry ranks in that range, but I'm just not, or finishes in that range, but I'm not willing to rank him this high because his ceiling just isn't that high. It's the same thing with Derek Carr. You're just talking about a very low ceiling, very low upside with him. So I'm not going to rank him inside the top 24, for example. But that being said, recently in a two-quarterback, or actually it was a Superflex league, but I just treat them the same, two-quarterback Superflex, the exact same for me. I did take Derek Carr as my third quarterback. The position was drying up a little bit, and I feel like I've gone the Tua or Justin Herbert route a few too many times, so I took Carr in that league just to sort of diversify things a little bit with my rosters. And I don't mind him as your third quarterback in a super flex or a two quarterback league. And part of it is who they added. You know, I think it's really interesting with Henry Ruggs. Like, we know he's fast. Everybody knows this guy has sub 4.3 speed. But what a lot of people don't realize is he is not a downfield threat. Like, Henry Ruggs is a low ADOT guy, a guy who you get the ball to in space and then, hey, kid, go do your thing, right? That's what, and that's not to say they'll never take deep shots with him, but Henry Ruggs has a lot of Tyreek Hill to his game. And I know some people did make that comp in the build up to the draft. That obviously is very appealing. Now, let's be clear, I'm not saying he's going to be Tyreek Hill, but he has Tyreek Hill elements to his game for sure. I actually really like the idea of Henry Ruggs this year because he's a low ADOT guy. He has a low ADOT quarterback. I mean, this is Derek Carr in his wheelhouse. You know, Derek Carr is like a 7.5 ADOT guy. You know, that's basically, I'm projecting him at 7.6 yards this year, average depth of target. So perfect, right? And the nice thing about Henry Ruggs, a lot of people will take CeeDee Lamb before him. They may take Jerry Jeudy before him. You end up getting Ruggs at half of value in most instances when you're looking to take him. I've noticed this over and over again. Like right now, for me, Henry Ruggs, I'm currently, I guess I'm pretty bullish on him because I have him at 42, and I know that a lot of people are not taking him in that range. Current ADP has him at 49. So you're getting a round or two of value if you're taking him. So I would take him as early as the 9th round. I don't think you have to. I think you can take him in the 10th, the 11th maybe, but and still get out ahead of ADP. So like him there. I know the buzz guy, though, for a lot of people is Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow cracks me up because the dude does not look like a football player, but he is a really freaking good football player, right? We saw it last year. Of course, we saw it at Clemson, but we saw it even down the stretch last year where he, you know, really took a nice step forward for that squad. But let's be clear, he's a slot receiver. Like, yes, he's also a low ADOT guy, which really does fit well for Derek Carr. But despite the nice finish in week 16 and 17 last year, I have him at 60. He's not really a guy who I'm going to be targeting because typically now you're talking about round 14. If I'm looking for a guy around 13, round 14, I'm probably going to take somebody more like Paris Campbell, who gives me a little bit more bang for my buck, or Curtis Samuel, who gives me a little bit more bang for my buck in that range than Hunter Renfrow. Currently have Samuel at 59, Renfrow at 60, Paris Campbell at 62. In between them, I have Larry Fitzgerald, who I'm not going to be drafting. But anyway, those are the two guys, really, though, because I don't think you're going to see much Tyrell Williams. I love Bryan Edwards. We're not going to see much of him this year, but dynasty-wise, definitely try and get some shares of him. And then Nelson Agholor, you're not going to see much of, because really the team, if you say who's the odds-on favorite to lead the team in targets, it isn't Ruggs, it's the tight end, right? It's Darren Waller. Darren Waller is coming off a season where he finishes the number two fantasy tight end. I don't think we can put him there. And the only reason why he was number two, by the way, is because, you know, George Kittle missed a little bit of time. But we can't put him there, but we can certainly put him, you know, just on the edge. I have him at five, so he's in that next tier. You know, the Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, maybe he's half a tier below them, but I don't even know if I would go that far. But I think fantasy drafters sometimes are going that far. Because you will, of Ertz and Andrews and Waller, the most likely to fall, to slip in drafts, is Darren Waller. Sometimes we'll see him slip as far as the late sixth. If he's there the late sixth, that's my tight end wheelhouse. I'm going after him every freaking time and not worrying about Evan Ingram, Tyler Higbee, Hunter Henry. I'm not worrying about that tier. So still love him. Athletic upside. He's got speed. You know, he's basically a wide receiver playing tight end, and he showed it last year. Let's talk about this backfield. Josh Jacobs. I think Josh Jacobs is a viable threat to approach 300 carries. Now, I'm not projecting him that with that many. I have him at 276, but that's still a lot of carries. If you think about it, that is a heck of a lot of carries. I mean, this year, from a rushing attempt standpoint, obviously, I think you could probably guess who I have at number one. It's Derrick Henry. Big surprise. Number two, not a big surprise either, Ezekiel Elliott. Jacobs is number three for me. I have him projected to see the third most rushing attempts. If you're going to see that much volume, like if you're a guy, even if you don't do much in the passing game, which unfortunately he's probably not going to. I know some people have had hope that he might do more in the passing game this year. I don't see it because I mentioned Bowden. They draft him. He's a versatile, position versatile guy who can do a little bit for you at wide receiver, but also can do some things for you out of the backfield. You have him. You have Jalen Richard. You also add Devontae Booker if he makes the team. And how many catches are we ultimately hoping for Jacobs here? I think I'm even maybe a little bit bullish having him with 36 catches. That's a lot for what we saw last year out of Josh Jacobs. But even if he's not that heavily involved, and, you know, by the way, last year in 13 games, Jacobs had 20 catches. So I'm upping it just a little bit. But even if he's not that involved in the passing game, if he approaches 300 carries, he's going to be an RB1. You know, it's not an if, but it's a how high does he finish? I'm conservatively ranking him at 12. I could see going a little bit higher than that. I could see going as high as ranking him at 10. Right now, he's going as the 13th running back off the board. So either way, you're probably going to end up getting some value with him. And the team is going to prioritize feeding him the rock. I like it. I like Josh Jacobs a lot here. All right, so let's transition over to a team where I don't like any of their running backs. The Miami Dolphins, and we got to talk about the quarterback situation before. I'm not going to bury the lead here. I'm not going to bury Tua and talk about the backfield. Blech. We'll get to that in a sec. Tua was awesome at Alabama. Now, there are some who say, and I think rightfully so to some degree, it's easy to be awesome when you have all of that talent, but at the same time, Tua was still really awesome at Alabama. Efficient, crazy efficient, and really deserving of where he went in the draft. No doubt in my mind there. But let's be clear. He very likely will not start in week one. The team does have an incumbent starter in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, yeah, he's getting a little bit older, but he's shown he's more than capable of being a starting quarterback in the NFL. And he's more than capable of giving you a slight leash with Tua so that you don't have to use Tua in September. They're going to get to him quickly, though. I talked about this on yesterday's show with Justin Herbert. I don't think we see Tyrod Taylor out there for more than four games. I don't think we see Fitzpatrick out there for more than four games. You know, I'd say let's set the over-under. If I said 3.5, would you take the under on that? What about 4.5? Would you take the under on that? I mean, it's right in that range, right? I don't think I'd go much more than that in terms of a line. So anyway, Tua will get out there. I'm excited to see what he can do, especially because he steps into a situation where he does have some decent weapons. You know, you have Devontae Parker, you have Preston Williams, you have Mike Gesicki. Those are some solid weapons right there to at least you get you started, and hopefully they continue to build around him because I do think this is a team that is now setting themselves up for some long-term success. I believe in what Brian Flores is doing. Last year, I actually had the privilege of talking to Scott Pioli and the former general manager in New England Patriots, and Scott told me, he said, hey, Brian is sharp. This guy knows what he's doing. And, you know, Scott said, you watch out. He's going to be successful. So, you know, of course, he may be a little bit biased because he worked with him. But, you know, it's just interesting hearing some stories behind the scenes of the type of coach Flores was with New England, you know, when he was working his way up. So, anyway, I do think this is interesting for the long term. Now, Tua for one quarterback leagues, no. For two quarterback leagues, yeah, he's an ideal guy. Who, yeah, I've certainly, like I said earlier in the show, I've gotten some shares of him as my third quarterback in a two quarterback or a super flex league because you probably aren't going to need him until at least October anyway. I mean, especially this year, we don't have any bye weeks until week 5, so you won't need him until at least that point. Gives you a little bit of time. You know, you get your own leash there with Tua as well. So let's talk about these wideouts. Devontae Parker, Preston Williams. Devontae Parker, it felt like, and as a long-running dynasty owner, it felt like the breakout was never going to happen, and we've seen this with some of these guys. The Josh Doctsons of the world. The breakout just never comes. Well, in year 5, it came. It finally came, and it actually was, it was a 4.5-year wait because he really didn't do that much over the first half of the season. I think a fair argument could be made that Preston Williams was the better wideout over that span of time. I mean, he was certainly the more targeted wideout. Preston Williams had a handful more targets than Parker over that stretch. But once Williams went down, Parker just went bonkers. You know, he had four top 10 fantasy finishes from week 11 on. Now, one of them is in week 17, so whatever. A number one weekly finish in week 13. He ends up with 1,202 yards, 9 receiving touchdowns, 72 catches, finishes as the number 11 fantasy wideout on the season. So do we think a repeat? No, not necessarily. I have him currently at 23, and part of it is because, you know, Preston Williams is going to be back on the field. Now, I'm not overly bullish on Williams. I have Williams at 44. But when you look at, like I said, over that first, it was the first 9 weeks of the season, but they had a bye week in there, so it was the first 8 games of the season. 59 targets for Williams, 48 for Parker. So Williams, like, the ball is going to find Williams. And I actually really like the idea of Preston Williams as sort of this upside target because you're not going to get any value on Parker now. Like, the secret is out on him or whatever. You know, people are buying in. I have him ranked, you know, right there in just inside the top 24 wideouts at 23. He's going as the number 24 in ADP. Preston Williams, on the other hand, there's some value to be had. I'm ranking him at 44. He's going as the number 54 wideout. So again, one of those guys where you have your running backs, maybe you're loaded up, you got your four running backs by round 10. Maybe you got your tight end in that 6-8 range. You got your quarterbacks. Maybe you drafted one, or if you do the safe and upside, you drafted two, and it's already round 13, and there's Preston Williams staring you in the face. I've had this happen to me multiple times. I do not mind that play at all. It's an upside play for sure, but upside is, you know, really the approach that you have to go after. You have to go after these high ceiling guys when you're looking at the overall course of the season. I don't want to do that week to week. I know people will ask me, who should I start? Should I start this guy because he has more upside? And I always say, no, start the guy who's going to score more fantasy points on average in each week. But when we're looking at the season, yeah, the guys with the higher ceiling are optimal for drafts. Let's go after that. Beyond those guys, Albert Wilson, I think he's a really interesting player, but you know him, Jakeem Grant, can these guys stay healthy? I don't really see any appeal to those guys this year. And likewise, I don't see much appeal to this backfield, unfortunately. I mean, Jordan Howard, for me, is the ultimate jag. And when I say jag, some people don't know what that means. It's just a guy. That's what it's short for. He's a jag. He is a just a guy. But he is a love to love for fantasy purposes. People love to love him. In fantasy football, they love to love him no matter what he does. And I don't really get it. For me, I'm ranking him at 44. I know some people have talked up his goal line work. Okay, cool. It really doesn't move the needle for me. He's going at 38 among running backs, so obviously ADP is ahead of where I'm ranking him. I'll probably never even look at him in any drafts this year. I did have a very interesting little blurb on him in the FTN fantasy football game plan. I'll just read you a little excerpt here about Jordan Howard. I said, Howard's efficiency started to dip in 2018. He was then sent to Philadelphia, where the wheels completely came off last year. Howard managed to suit up for 9 games, but only posted 1 top 10 fantasy finish. By midseason, it was clear he couldn't even hold Miles Sanders' jock, though the official narrative was that he suffered a shoulder injury. Regardless, the Eagles let Howard walk, and he landed with the Dolphins, who showed their confidence in him by promptly trading for Matt Breda. So yeah, you could say that we aren't very bullish on Howard entering 2020. There's not much there for me. I know it's maybe a little bit heavy-handed, but I sometimes have to drive that point home. And the same thing with Matt Breda. I love Matt Breda. I love Matt Breda. I don't want to have him on my fantasy squads, though. Because Matt Breda is an undersized back. Yes, he has juice any given play, but he also has major injury worries any given play as well. We consistently see him, you know, have seen him miss time over the last couple years. So it's just a backfield in general I'm looking to fade. If I had to choose one, you have to choose one, Jeff. I'll go with Matt Breda, but I have him at 41, so it's not like I'm overly bullish on him. If fantasy drafters had to choose one right now, it looks like they are choosing Jordan Howard ahead of Matt Breda. So, and it's close. Jordan Howard at 38, Matt Breda at 42. So either way, relatively close to my rankings. But let's save the best for last. Mike Gesicki. How good was this guy down the stretch last year? I mean, really the team was pretty solid down the stretch. I mean, they weren't tanking last year. They were not tanking. So when you look at what he did from week 9 on, he had 5 top 10 fantasy finishes down that stretch. And I mean, hey, he scored as many receiving touchdowns over that stretch as Travis Kelce and George Kittle. He had 5 over that stretch. So pretty solid there. A little volatile, no doubt about it. But what I like to see out of players, especially young players in the NFL, is taking a step forward each year. He certainly did that from year 1 to year 2. Now, what does he do from year 2 to year 3? We know he's athletic as all get up. You know, he was incredible at his combine, and he's not going to block, and I don't care. Last year, he ran 70% of his routes out of the slot. An additional 12% more out wide, only 18% lined up in line as a tight end. So he's basically a wide out, not to mention the fact that this team's going to run a lot of 4 wide this year. So I think we're going to see Gesicki essentially lined up as a wide receiver for a good chunk of the season. Because remember, it's Chan Gailey, and that's 4 wide. So that's fun. And I do like taking Mike Gesicki. If I'm not going in, the way the draft shakes out, I miss on my little grouping of Evan Engram, Tyler Higbee, and Hunter Henry. Sometimes that happens. You can't control everything in a draft. So they go off before you're up. Well, I'm not going to force Rob Gronkowski. I'm not going to go after Jared Cook. I'm not going to force Hayden Hurst. I may just wait a little bit. I have Gesicki ranked at 13. He's going at 13 among tight ends, which you're essentially looking at about round 11, give or take. I may just wait and then say, all right, I know that I'm going to be looking at tight ends in this range. And if I don't get Gesicki, I could go after somebody like Noah Fant. I'm just shooting for a ceiling in that range now if I miss on my round six to eight guys. You know, just some larger strategy there. Anyway, there you go. The Las Vegas Raiders and the Miami Dolphins in the hopper. The show goes on, and we continue on Monday with the Minnesota Vikings and the New England Patriots. And boy, this is going to be interesting. Minnesota, of course, very interesting because no Stephon Diggs. What does that do for Adam Thielen? Justin Jefferson in the house. Will we see a holdout in this backfield? Where should we be drafting Alexander Mattison just in case? And is there any upside with Kirk Cousins? Any upside there? New England. Well, we know there's upside with Cam Newton, and I'm not going to bury the lead there. I'll talk about Cam Newton and his fit. What is the effect on James White? The rest of the backfield, we know Sony Michel could potentially miss some time into the regular season. Is there hope for Julian Edelman, N'Keal Harry, some upside? I really don't think there's a tight end alike here. They drafted two of them, and I'll tell you about the two they drafted, but there you go. That's a lot to talk about. Hey, in the meantime, do me a favor. Review the show on iTunes and give it a rating. And the easiest way to do this, open up the iTunes app, scroll down, and just tap the stars. It's so simple, and it helps me out more than you know. Appreciate everybody who's done that so far. Keep doing it. Please, please, please keep doing it. In the meantime as well, you can follow along on social media. I'm at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter and Instagram. And use that hashtag RatPack. That way I know you're a listener of the show. I see you, RatPack. All right, enjoy your weekend. I'll catch you on the flip side for another edition of the pod. I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out of here.